Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the iSports MSU Red Zeta Report. I am Tyler Hayward. Seth Kinker is with me today as we're going to get ready to preview a rivalry renewed, Michigan State and Wisconsin. Second week in a row we've actually previewed a rivalry renewed. But the iSports MSU Red Zeta Report is, of course, a part of iSportsWeb.com. Be sure to check out that website for the latest sports news and opinions. You can like us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter at Red Zeta Report to listen to our archived shows, including our most recent one, a wrap-up of the Michigan State-Notre Dame game. Like I said, Seth is with me. Seth, how are you doing today?
Good, man. How are you doing this morning?
Doing well. So, like I said, this is a rivalry renewed. What do you think that this kind of means to the programs, given the fact that with the addition of Rutgers and Maryland to the Big Ten, it kind of slowed the momentum for what was turning out to be the best and most competitive rivalry in the Big Ten?
Mark D'Antonio touched on it a little bit this week about how he modeled his programs after Wisconsin and Iowa, and I've always been a fan of Wisconsin because of just how well they play football. They've always been consistent, as D'Antonio said. They've always, no matter what year in and year out, you can always bet on the fact that they have a strong offensive line and a strong running game. They're always a good team to watch.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it hit the nail on the head. I mean, obviously, he's modeled it after Wisconsin and Iowa. He's obviously done it to a better level, you could say, even though Wisconsin has won a few of the past Big Ten championships and Michigan State splitting five of the last six Big Ten titles. And so I think it is interesting to see these two teams match up because they both are so consistent, even though Michigan State's level of consistency seems to be just a little bit higher. Speaking of consistency, Wisconsin, far from that up to this point early in the season, which is typically the Wisconsin way. They tend to do things a little bit different when it comes to the early portion of their schedule. And you've seen that so far. They've beaten LSU. Huge win, giant win at a raucous Lambeau Field. But then they had trouble with Georgia State. What is your opinion on Wisconsin? Are they as bad as they showed against Georgia State, or are they as good as they showed against LSU?
I think they are as good as they showed against LSU. A lot of those, you know, those smaller teams, they get those paychecks to come to these bigger D1 schools, and they come to play. You know, it's an opportunity for them to shock the world. So they're giving their all. They're giving 150%. And, you know, who knows, maybe Wisconsin, as much as the coaches or players don't want to say it, maybe they might have not as taken it as seriously as they should have. And that might have showed that week in the scoreboard against Georgia State.
Yeah, they almost their name's up there with Iowa, obviously. Georgia State is an FBS school as opposed to North Dakota State, but I think we can all agree North Dakota State is, better than advertised when you put them up against their league. So.
Yeah,
but
definitely.
Wisconsin, you said it, they are a good team. They're a great team. Right now, anyways, 11th in the country, Michigan State number 8 in the country. And I think one of the more interesting aspects of this game really has nothing to do with what's going to go on, you know, between the lines. It has a little more to do with how people are going to watch the action. Big Ten Network, noon kickoff. Well, I mean, this is the highest, like, combination of ranked teams, 10 network game ever. What are your thoughts on the timing and the schedule of this one?
I was honestly surprised. I would figure that game would have got moved up to more of a primetime slot on maybe a bigger network. But, I mean, that's great for the Big Ten network. Obviously, we were one of the first conferences to establish their own channel with the SEC and the Pac-12 following suit after. So, it's just great, more exposure for the Big Ten. So I love it. It's a noon game, so it's normal college football time for everybody. Everybody's going to be up and ready for that one, definitely. We haven't played Wisconsin in whatever it is, X amount of years. So it's going to be really good to see that one back on BTN. What about you? What do you think about it?
My thing is, even though Michigan State got a lot of help with their game on NBC against Notre Dame and just how dominant they looked until they let their foot slide off the accelerator a little bit. I mean, from even more national exposure, which in turn, obviously, recruits want to play on TV. Mark Antonio has done a good job turning two stars into three stars, and then he got three stars, turned them into four, and then he got four, turned them into five. Now he's starting to get a couple five stars every now and again. Is this in any way going to slow down the process as far as recruiting that top-tier talent for D'Antonio?
I don't think so, because you've got those – you might have an outlier, too, who may look at that as far as the exposure. But at the same time, as you mentioned, Michigan State and Mark D'Antonio and his staff have done a great job of building up those lower recruits over the years. And now with that system is so far advanced since he's been there in year one, now in his 10th year, he's got Curtis Blackwell, the director of recruiting pretty much. And I think that they've done a great job of getting those players on campus for those big games. So any of those recruits that might have those thoughts, those bigger ones, they're going to be, I don't think they'll have that thought about the exposure because they're going to be at the game on the sidelines. You know, they're going to be on the sidelines, yeah, seeing how the Spartan players play. They're going to see the environment and the atmosphere of Spartan Stadium. And that's going to be bigger because they want to see how they play football in front of their home crowd. And they're going to be in the stadium on the sideline for that. So I don't think it will be that big of a deal.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you're kind of right. It is a big recruiting weekend for Michigan State still. Let's turn our attention to the opposition for this Saturday. They play the Badgers, which pretty much means their offense starts, continues, and ends with Corey Clement. He's listed as questionable for the game, and that's not all. Tywan Deal and Bradrick Shaw also listed as questionable. That's three of Wisconsin's top four running backs. They will. It's obvious that they're going to miss Corey Clement if he is unable to go against Michigan State. But how much will they miss him, given the fact that they also don't really have the depth? They've only got one running back who's seen significant reps.
Well, I think that's going to affect them a lot because, as I mentioned before, Wisconsin has been such a staple in the running game in college football over the past however many years you want to look at it. They've always had a great line, and they've always had great running backs. So I really think that this is going to affect how they play because, obviously, Wisconsin knows that they're not trying to hide it. Their running back coach, John Settle, has been asked about it like this past few weeks, and I think that's going to affect them in all senses of the game that they play. We'll talk about this later. Obviously, their new starting quarterback, but for a new starting quarterback, a big thing that helps is having a blanket such as the run game that Wisconsin is so used to having. So I really think Michigan State's defense is going to be playing really downhill, blitzing a lot, trying to take away this run game and forcing that quarterback, the new freshman quarterback, to step in and make plays himself.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. I do know one thing. They need at least one of those guys to suit up and help Dare Agun. You know, I'm not even going to try to say his last name. Agunbowale or whatever it is. You know, that's what I get for lack of preparation, I guess. But either way, he's a pretty good running back in and of his own right. Michigan State has the 8th best rush defense in the country. Now it helps that you play a team like Furman, and it helps it play a spread team like Notre Dame. Even though Notre Dame does like running the ball, Michigan State was able to build up enough of a lead early in the game. They held Notre Dame to 57 yards, which is really impressive when you look at the way Michigan State has struggled with the rushing game of spread teams.
Mm-hmm.
And so they tend to do much, much better against power teams, much like Wisconsin. And even you look at the scores of the games exemplify that. I would say if you look at the past few years, this defense would probably most resemble 2014. It's not going to be as shaky as last season's. It's not going to be as good as 2012 or 2013 because you can lump those two with the 65 and 66 squads that Michigan State had with Bubba Smith, George Webster, and company. And so I would probably liken it to what 2014 brought to the table. And if you look at it, Michigan State against spread teams allowed 28.4 points a game. Against power teams, 10.2. Wisconsin falls into that power teams category. And so I think you're right. We are going to see a lot of pressure, mostly because you look at how Michigan State succeeded against Notre Dame. Yeah, their defensive line did just enough. Chris Fry, Riley Bolla, and John Reschke. And so I think that that's going to be the key is if you said it, Wisconsin always brings in good offensive linemen. The defensive line, they need to be able to hold their own. That's it. They don't need to do anything more than that if they want to beat Wisconsin.
Yep.
Let's take a look at that Wisconsin offensive line. It's an interesting look, to say the least. Jacob Maxwell, right tackle, sophomore. Bo Benchwowl, sophomore, left guard. What do you think of this matchup? Obviously, Malik McDowell is going to hold an edge over anybody he plays throughout the rest of the season, except for maybe if he matches up against Dan Feeney of Indiana every now and again.
Mm.
What do you think of the rest of the matchups, though? Demetrius Cooper on the edge and Nevin Jones and so on.
Well, I think that I think the Notre Dame game was a really big a growing point for them. As we said, we know we play the spread game, but at the same time, how well they played Notre Dame in the running game which they do like to do run the ball. That environment, I think, that was the first real test for them in a very young offensive line. Obviously, Michigan State losing a lot of depth at that specific position group this offseason. So I think that that game under the lights, the first true road test under a quality opponent such as Notre Dame, a high-ranked and nationally televised game, I think that's going to be good for that unit as far as moving forward and experience. You saw Raekwon Williams play a lot better with that, especially with that sack near the end of the game. But I think across the whole defensive line front, I think that's going to see – we're going to see them play that was good for them. It was definitely a growing experience, and I think they're only going to build on that for the rest of the season heading into Big Ten play.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the experience of it all. Demetrius Cooper, he's got a bit of experience as a pass rusher. Kevin Williams has a few games sprinkled in here and there. Well, many games sprinkled in here and there as he was battling through an injury-riddled time at Nebraska. Evan Jones, he has a lot of playing time as well as a spot player, kind of filling out that bookend position. And when you look at this Wisconsin team, well, when you look at those guys, they're all seniors. Obviously, Raekwon Williams isn't. Malik McDowell plays like an NFL player already. But everybody else is a junior or senior up there. They've got the upper class, and we've talked about how young the starters are for Wisconsin. Okay, the 10 players on Wisconsin's two deep on the offensive line, one junior, two redshirt freshmen, the rest are sophomores. And so I think that experience, especially in the defense, it can be complicated. It can be, obviously. We saw the latter half of the Notre Dame game that it wasn't complicated, that it also could be very basic. But in quarters one, two, and three, you saw how complicated it could get. It slowed down an offense that's supposed to be as dynamic as Notre Dame's. And I think that experience up front is going to be a really, really big edge when you talk about what Michigan State's going to be able to bring to the table. Now, the guy who's going to be reading that defense, Wisconsin also has a little bit of youth there as well, Alex Hornibrook. Well, he's played in two games as a redshirt freshman. He's put up pretty impressive numbers, but is the competition really there for him? What are your thoughts on Hornibrook and him getting his first start in East Lansing?
Well, honestly, I'm a little bit worried for him. He did look good coming back against Georgia State, but like you said, it's Georgia State. That game never should have been that close in the first place. And then to add on top of it, during that Tuesday media availability this week, he kind of blew it. The other quarterback, Bart Houston, and Paul Christ, and everybody else in the Wisconsin football athletic department were kind of under the same idea that they weren't really going to reveal who the starter was. And when Hornibrook was asked if he was going to start, he kind of just gave it away and tipped it and said, yeah. And since then, obviously, right after that, he went over to some SID officials for Wisconsin, and he came back and said that coaches, it was just the same message that we've heard since then. Coach is getting both of us ready to go. If I'm the guy, I'm ready to go. If Bart's the guy, I'm ready for that too. But they kind of just revealed that I think Wisconsin is planning on moving forward with Alex Hornibrook, and he's a young quarterback, like you're saying, he's a redshirt freshman. He's coming into a stadium that's going to be loud. We haven't played Wisconsin in a minute. It's a freshman quarterback, so you know the defense is going to get after him. They're going to try to make him make those quick reads, make mistakes. And they're going to try to eliminate his help at running back, like I said earlier. They're going to try to blitz a lot and make him beat them. He's a young quarterback, so they're going to see if he has it. If he doesn't, then he's going to get eaten alive by the defense blitzing or the defensive line pressure.
Yeah, that's the thing. But he's put up good numbers. He's been 13-17, 183 yards through his two games, two touchdowns. Does have one interception, but he's got quarterback rating 194 right now. Not enough to qualify him on the FBS level for pure numbers sake and ranking sake, but it's pretty good for a redshirt freshman. And they do have some – Wisconsin does have some underrated talent on the outside when you look at guys like Rob Wheelwright and Jazz Peavy. They're both pretty good playmakers, but at the same time, if Michigan State is tightened up, Tyson Smith, he's expected to see – a lot more playing time as the season progresses. I think after the Notre Dame game, it opened up a little bit as to who he might see that playing time for. There was a lot of doubt about Hicks. Hicks has played well. He gave up a deep one against Notre Dame on the sideline. But Vyonte Copeland made constant rookie-like mistakes, which I guess it is kind of acceptable because he has only played 2.5 games in his career. But at the same time, were those mistakes enough to open the door for Smith? And what do you think of the matchups between TB, Wheelwright, and then those defensive backs, whoever it is back there? Because either way, those three guys for sure will play, and Josh Butler will probably see a few reps.
Well, I mean, I think that Michigan State is going to try to disguise that a little bit. As you said, with Copeland struggling, for me, this is still talking about the passing game. It falls down on the linebackers because he's a young quarterback, and like he did a great job against Georgia State. They wouldn't have won that game without him. Don't get me wrong. He led him on that game winning drive, but that was at home in an environment he's used to playing with against a lower tier team. If Michigan State starts to get in his face and starts bringing these blitzes and doesn't get him even the time to throw like Michigan State's known to do when they bring those linebackers constantly, I don't know that it'll really matter as far as the matchups outside if he's not going to get the time to throw. And with Ed Davis only going to be – I know he only played one snap last week at Notre Dame, but he's going to be playing more and more as the season goes on. He has the knowledge of the playbook. He knows the blitzes, knows the packages. So if – they can get pressure up front with that.
And he excels as a pass rusher.
Yeah, I think that's just really going to affect that their passing game. And it might disguise a little bit Copeland's inexperience as he gets used to the grind of football again, gets back into the swing of things, and any other secondary out there.
Yeah, I think that the Ed Davis thing, I think that we won't – I mean, a lot of people have high expectations. Like, he's going – expectations for him. Like, he's just going to – snap his fingers and magically this defense is going to be that much better than what it already is capable of. But he missed over a year due to the injury, and then or he missed about 9 to 10 months due to the injury. Then they had to wait on his eligibility on him getting ready to him graduating, and then they had to wait on the NCAA to announce where they stand regarding his eligibility. And, I mean, he got to practice once he graduated, but ultimately that's still a lot of time lost. while they were waiting for him to finish up his academic career at Michigan State. And so I think that we will only see him a little bit as a pass rusher. Now, this is Hornibrook's first start. It's on the road. It's against the top 10 team. Michigan State has a quarterback, started on the road against a top 10 team. In his first career start last year, let's talk about Tyler O'Connor. He did he's beat Furman. He beat a Notre Dame team who I have said may not be that good. Period.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if they win, I think I've got the over-under right now at about 7, 7.5, and that was kind of the feeling down in South Bend, is that this is a 7 or 8 win team right now at best. Because the offense hasn't really got going until they were down by a bunch of points in defenses like Texas and Michigan State let up. So, what can Tyler O'Connor do against a good defense? Ohio State, obviously a good defense, but it was such a downpour. It was pretty much decided by the running game in Columbus. What can he do against a good defense? Do you think that he can still live up to the expectations?
We'll obviously see later in the season once the game comes, but I think so, because a lot of people didn't really like the comparison that was made between Maxwell and him coming in a similar situation, Andrew Maxwell being former Michigan State quarterback who stepped in for Kirk Cousins. And as far as – he passed the eye test for me, and the eye test was at Notre Dame, regardless of if that team isn't as good as the rankings say they are. He proved himself. It was a true road test, regardless of the quality of the team. It was a loud environment, a hostile environment, and he came and he looked calm, cool, and collected. He only missed six throws, I believe, and he made a lot of tight throws, a lot of good tight windows, including that the one at the end there to Donnie Corley to really help clinch it.
And see, now my point, to play devil's advocate here, the one to Donnie Corley was low. The touchdown to Donnie Corley should have been intercepted. I mean, not to really compare this to the real-life situation that our troops go for. I compared it to PTSD with the Braylon Edwards catch on Jaren Hayes. You know, Hayes should have had that ball. Braylon Edwards took it from him. The bad interception that he threw where he was a little bit behind, I believe it was Josiah Price, can get your throws that he's been making and keep it going, because you look at his numbers. Now, keep in mind, they are helped a little bit by the chance sweeps against Notre Dame where he pitched off to Shelton and Shelton was running for a touchdown. He's still sixth in the nation in completion percentage. No, I'm sorry. Sixth in the nation in pass efficiency. Fifth in the nation in completion percentage. And even after just the Furman game, if you start looking at his numbers, he's on pace to have the highest completion percentage in Michigan State history, surpassing Drew Stanton by about 3 or 4 points. I think that that's going to be the key, is he's not going to face a pass rush like he's going to face this weekend. You look at Beagle and T.J. Watt and guys of that nature who have the ability to get after the quarterback. Ohio State was more run blitzes than anything else, and I think that this game is going to decide whether or not O'Connor continues putting his name up there with the likes of good quarterbacks like Stanton and Cook and Cousins, or if he does end up dropping down to that Maxwell phase a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you see it as the – like, this could be the game Tyler O'Connor's career goes?
I don't know about that. I think it is a bigger test than Notre Dame, definitely. But it still is very young in the season. They've only had 3 games out of their 4 weeks with that really early week bye. And it's his first year, full year, finally, as the player, the guy at the helm. So he doesn't have to be looking over his shoulder, doesn't have to worry about that. So I really think that these early 4 to 5 games are really big as far, and I know with the new conference alignment that we have more conference games, so it starts a little bit quicker. But even so, just getting out the early season jitters, and with all these, he's got Josiah Price and R.J. Shelton as players who've been in the system a long time. He's got a safety blanket at running back with L.J. Scott, Gerald Holmes, Madre London, regardless of whoever plays back there, they can always hand the ball off to. But I think it's big because he's got those players to protect him, to kind of like fall back on the guys with experience. And at the same time, he's building a rep with those guys, as well as the newer young guys, Donnie Corley, Felton Davis, the other guys who don't have as much game time experience as well. So even though they're different in a year-wise, I know he's a redshirt senior. Felton Davis is a true sophomore, and then you got Donnie Corley, the true freshman. Him getting these reps and building in this time with them is definitely huge. I don't know if it's the biggest game, but it's their biggest test in seeing where they are as a unit so far, I think, as an offense.
We've got just about 3.5 minutes left. Really quickly, let's talk about the rest of the offense. Can Michigan State run the ball against Wisconsin when Wisconsin knows that it's coming? It's kind of like the other way around. You know, we talk about Michigan State stopping the run. Can Michigan State move the ball against Wisconsin on the ground?
I think so. The Badgers do have they're ranked 13th in run defense with only 82.3 yards per game. So they're stout.
Mm-hmm.
They're stout there, but I don't think they faced a team like Michigan State with and I know we only want to use one. I know that's kind of the move. They're moving away from the stable, but they have that stable of running backs if one gets worn down. And I don't think there's that big of a drop off in talent. They have three guys to rotate in and out at you. And besides the running backs, the line is really starting to gel. You saw that last week against Notre Dame. Michigan State with offensive line coach Mark Staten has always been great about playing more offensive linemen than usual. And last week, you really started to see that play out. You started to see Cody Keeler kind of move anywhere around the line. He can be put almost anywhere. You had Jamal Lyles even on one play on a weird alignment, lined up as a tackle. So I think the experience of their line and them really gelling as a unit is going to be the deciding factor in that game. So it'll be interesting to see the upfront battle, but I think Michigan State's offensive line is going to come out on top against Wisconsin's defensive line.
All right, prediction for this weekend. Got about 2 minutes left.
I don't want to shoot too high because I'm really interested to see how this – I'll go – What about you?
It's going to be a low-scoring game. That's the way I see it. We talked about both defenses. It's really strong against the run. And at the same time, that's also the bread and butter for both offenses is the running game. It comes down to who can make the bigger plays. We talked about Jazz Peavy and Rob Wheelwright being able to do it, but Monty Medeiros is a big play threat. Felton Davis, he's got the potential to be R.J. Shelton. He's been a little bit more of a possession receiver, but he's made big plays like the 3rd-and-7 catch against Rutgers late in the game. Then, obviously, you talk about Donnie Corley making big plays already as a true freshman. I think Michigan State has more of the ability to make plays, and I think with both of these defenses, big plays are going to be at a premium. So it's whoever gets the most of those. I like Michigan State's talent a little bit better. In that regard, I've got Michigan State winning this. I think one big play breaks it open, 17-13. But that does it for us today. Be sure to tune in next Monday as we recap the Wisconsin game this weekend. For Seth Kinker, I am Tyler Hayward. You've been listening to the iSports MSU Red Cedar Report.